Now, Pat began his speech by telling me that my basic argument was an argument of prophecy, and that simply because it was prophesied, therefore, it was forced to come to pass. Now, I began my first affirmative by making it very clear that I wasn't arguing simply from prophecy or foreknowledge, but Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 4 teaches that the sinless death of Christ was predestined. And of course, Mr. Donahue agrees that predestined means force. Now, he cannot have it both ways. If the sinless death of Christ, in other words, that death that is necessary for him to die for sins, is forced to happen, if the sinless redemptive death is forced to happen, nothing that could have prevented the forced sinless death of Christ could have occurred. And all of the prophecy items like Judas and the other things that he mentioned that were simply foreknowledge is not relevant to the sinless death of Christ. The one thing that is relevant and is necessary for the sinless death of Christ is the sinless life of Christ. And if the sinless death of Christ was forced or predestined, then therefore anything that would have prevented that sinless death could not have occurred. Now, we're going to talk about some of the matters that Mr. Donahue raised in Hebrews chapter 2. And it is going to be my attempt in this speech to talk about Hebrews chapters 2, 4, and 5. His passages on tempted in Hebrews 2, Hebrews 4, and that the Son of God learned obedience in Hebrews chapter 5 and verse number 7. But we're going to begin with the point that I made, to which he did make reference to and respond to, that the word secur does not mean empathize. And he looked it up in the dictionary, and sure enough, I was right. Secur does not mean empathize. It simply means to help. And he said the way that he helps is that he empathizes. Now, this is simply not the case. And he went to Hebrews 4:15 to prove it, that he was touched with the feelings of our infirmities. Give me chart number 88. Chart number 88. Now, if an equality in experience, as he is arguing, is necessary in order for Christ to be able to empathize with us, if an equality in experience, i.e., that you have to have experienced the same thing in order to be able to empathize with someone, then we have a problem here. First of all, Hebrews 4:15 does say, "For we have not a high priest which cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities." Now notice what it doesn't say. It doesn't say he can be touched with our infirmities. It says he can be touched with the feelings of our infirmities. And the word in the Greek is sympatheo. Touched with the feelings comes from the word sympatheo, which means to feel sympathy. Now, I'm not for sure if he means to make a distinction between sympathy and empathy. Okay? I think there is a distinction, though I will not make a point out of that. But the point I will make here is sufficient to say that the word translated from the Greek, sympatheo, touched with the feelings, is only used one other time in the New Testament, and that word is used in Hebrews chapter 10 and verse number 34. Now, Paul said, or the writer of Hebrews, I think it's Paul, it's irrelevant to the point I'm making here. Hebrews 10:34 said, "For ye have sympatheo, compassion of me in my bonds." Now, if an equality in experience, if you must experience what the other person experiences in order to sympathize, then that is an impossibility in this text. For one of the questions, and the first question that I ask him for tonight's discussion is it possible that some of the ye in Hebrews 10:34 had not been in bonds? And he said yes. So he's saying it's possible that the ye had not been in bonds the way that Paul had, yet they had sympatheo with Paul in his bonds, yet they hadn't even experienced what he experienced.
the way he experienced. So his point in Hebrews 4:15 is totally misses the point of the passage. Hebrews 4:15 does not say that he has to experience what we experience, the way we experience it, in order to sympathize with us, because if it did, then that would demand that all of the ye in Hebrews 10:34 would have had to have been in bonds and experienced it just like Paul experienced it, or they could not have sympathized with him. So you see the difference, and you understand the point that I'm being made here. So if they can sympathize with Paul in Hebrews 10:34 and not experience it the way he experienced it, then he can sympathize with us in Hebrews 4:15 and not experience temptation in every way the way that we experience temptation. Give me chart number 102, I believe is the chart that I'm wanting here. Okay, chart number 102. Now, if I'm going to make an argument on what it means to be really, really tempted and see if Jesus was tempted the way that we are tempted rather than what the verse says, is that he was tempted in the points like we are tempted, not in the way we are tempted. Now, James 1:13 and 14, let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone with evil. But each one is tempted by evil, or tempted when he is drawn away of his own desires and enticed. Now notice, when a man is tempted, when is a man tempted? Every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his desire. In other words, for the temptation to be real, he must desire it. For if he does not desire it, it is no temptation. You can't be tempted by what you do not desire. Now, the point I'm making here is when a homosexual, which Pat and I, of course, obviously both agree is a sin. When a homosexual is tempted with homosexuality or tempted by homosexuality, you know what that means? When he is tempted by it, he has a desire for it. That is what he desires. It doesn't mean that he yields to it. In other words, even a person who is a Christian can be tempted by homosexuality. He can have a desire for that. But through the power of the grace of God, he does not have to yield to it, even though there is a desire for it. He can overcome it, resist that desire, but the point is, for him to be tempted by homosexuality, he has to have a desire for homosexuality. Else, it is no temptation. You're not tempted by anything you don't desire. The mere fact that it is a temptation demands that you have a desire for the temptation. Now notice this. Question number two that I asked Mr. Donahue for this evening was, did Jesus ever have desires for the following sins? A, homosexuality. No, he says no. B, bestiality, he says no. C, incest, no. He didn't have any desire for that. Suicide, no. He had no desire for suicide. So, if desire for the thing, for the temptation, is necessary, and Jesus never had a desire for any of the sins listed, therefore, he cannot empathize with the person who has a desire for homosexuality, a desire for bestiality, because he has never experienced that desire, because he has an experience, therefore he cannot empathize with that person. The point is, and I agree with Mr. Donahue, Jesus never had a homosexual desire. Jesus never had a desire for bestiality. But there are people that are tempted with that, that do have that desire. They may overcome it, they may resist it, but the mere fact that it is a temptation to them means they have that desire. And if Jesus never had the desire for homosexuality, he was not tempted the way the person who has a desire for homosexuality is tempted. Therefore, it proves my point in Hebrews 4:15 that Jesus was not tempted the way we are. He was tempted in the points that we're tempted in. And the points that he was tempted in was in the wilderness temptation. All that is in the world is the lust of the eyes. 1 John 2 says, all that is in the world is the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. All three
three, every sin that a man ever commits is going to fall into one of those three categories. And every one of those points are the points that Jesus was tempted in the wilderness temptation. He was tempted with the lust of the flesh, turned stones into bread. He was tempted with the lust of the eyes. He showed him the kingdoms of the world. He was tempted with the pride of life. In other words, he promised him the glory of those kingdoms. It would have been the pride of life that would have made him want the glory of the kingdom. It was the lust of the eyes that the devil appealed to, showing him the kingdoms of the world. So Jesus was tempted in every point like we are, categorically. He wasn't tempted the way we are. He was tempted in the points like we are, categorically and not individually. So unless Mr. Donahue can change his mind and say that Jesus actually had a desire for homosexuality or had that desire in him, he cannot say that he was tempted like the person is who does have that desire, even though he may never yield to it because he depends on the power of the Spirit and the grace of God to help him resist. Hebrews chapter 2 and verse number 18. Give me chart number 80. We're going to talk about the context of Hebrews chapter 2. Hebrews chapter 2 says that he was in all things, it behooved him to be made like unto his brethren. Now notice what Pat said. Pat said, and I believe I'm quoting it pretty close, that he was made in all points like unto his brethren so that he could be tempted. That's not what Hebrews 2:17 says. It says he was made, wherefore in all things it behooved him to be made like unto his brethren, that he might be a faithful and merciful high priest. It doesn't say that he was made in all points or in all things like unto his brethren so he could be tempted. It said he was made in all things like unto his brethren so that he could be a high priest. Not that he could be tempted. Now let's further go and talk about the context of Hebrews chapter 2. Give me the next chart. Chart number 81. Hebrews 2:17, wherefore in all things it behooved him to be made like unto his brethren. How is he made like unto his brethren in all things? Verse number 14. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he likewise took part of the same. The way he was made in all points like unto his brethren was in flesh and blood. They were partakers of flesh and blood. He was partakers of flesh and blood. So he was made like in his like unto his brethren in all things, namely, under context, flesh and blood. It does not say he was made like unto his brethren so he could be tempted like his brethren. That is not what the passage teaches. Chart number 82. Now, Vincent's word studies. This is an argument that Vincent makes here. Vincent says that in that he himself had suffered being tempted. He says that the word suffered qualifies tempted, explaining in what the temptation consisted, namely suffering. In other words, what the verse is saying is that the suffering was the temptation, or that the temptation was the suffering. The ALT of Hebrews 2:18 says, for he himself having been tested in what he suffered, he is able to help the ones being tested. The similarity in this text here, and I've only got 1 minute left and I'm not going to be able to finish the argument, but the point here is that the temptation was the suffering. Let me see, go to the next chart. Let me see if I can make the point really fast here. What is the text of Hebrews 2? What is man that thou art mindful of him and that thou visitest him? Verse 6. Obviously, that's the incarnation. How do I know? Verse 7, he was made a little lower than the angels. Why was he made lower than the angels? Verse 9, what? For the suffering of death. Verse 10, he was made perfect through suffering. What was the suffering of the context? The suffering of the context is the suffering of death. And it goes on down. We have to understand verse 18 in light of the context. What is the suffering of death? What was it that he suffered in verse 18? Verse 9, the suffering of death. In other words, because Christ suffered in death, because he suffered on the cross, he helps those that are that suffer. The similarity is the suffering and not necessarily the points in which they are tempted. The similarity is suffering. The suffering of verse 18 is the suffering of verse 9, namely the suffering of death.